Hello and welcome to another weekly episode of the Beer Fridge Podcast. As always, your home for real beer, real breweries, real opinions. On this week's episode, we're going to chat some homebrew. We're going to chat what the fuck is fresh ale.
Beer Fridge Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another weekly episode of the Beer Fridge Podcast, your home of real beer, real breweries, real opinions. As always, wherever you listen to this episode, make sure you subscribe, hit that ding-a-ling-a-ling to be notified of all the latest episodes. Drop us a five-star rating if you're watching on YouTube, Instagram, or Facebook, or whatever it may be. Make sure you do so as well. Top nine in the world, by the way. Just saying. My name is Gavin. I've got my usual drinking buddies in the form of Callum, MD, and Scott. Good evening, boys. How we doing?
Hello.
Good evening.
Number nine, baby. Number nine.
Yeah, I don't care the legitimacy of that website. I am fucking taking it.
It did take me a while to get the website loaded up and, you know, find eight other, you know, podcasts that I felt were worthy of going above us on a list. However, totally worth it.
You've got to go past all the ease to release X's sister or mother-in-law or whatever it is, wherever it is they're captured, Nigerian princes, any other scam you can possibly think of that you would receive over the internet. Certain things being enlarged, certain things being shrunk.
My boobs are big enough, mate. That's fine.
Pills for various other bits and pieces, and then you eventually get to the list.
You get to the list. You definitely get to the list eventually. We are there. And yeah, like I said, I'll take it. I'll fucking take it. Right, we'll start off as we normally do. Go around the virtual table, see what we're drinking to kick things off.
I'm going to need the virtual table to go and get a virtual beer.
You're going to get a virtual beer. And Calm will kick us off with what
I will. He's drinking. I'm drinking something that's been in the can for a little bit, to be fair. From what I can gather with the dates, it's been in the can since the end of November. And it's a beer from Pentridge, and it's called No Cheesies for Us Mises. and it's a lovely session. Trent. And it's, yeah, delicious. Vanilla and chocolate added. And the body's great. It's thick and syrupy, not too sweet. Loads of coffee flavours before really you get too much sweetness there. It's delicious.
Sounds good, mate.
Getting better it warms up because it was icy cold out the fridge.
Lovely jubbly. I'm kicking off with a
beer.
It is a beer.
You sure?
Stroke, just liquid metal. Which we've had before, we've spoken about it before. I'm just having this as a warm up beer. No. 71 Brewing, it's the Luminous Nights, New England Double IPA. I used to enjoy it as well, and then they must have changed it because it's not as good as it used to be. I'm not saying the first one was good, I'm saying the first one was drinkable. This is. It's drinkable enough, but just not on the same level as it was before. But I have got poised potentially the best dip I've had this year. And I've had putty. And it's not that. And it's a fucking wicked beer from Beak. So looking forward to cracking it open again. It's the second time I'm having it. Incidentally, it was that good the first time. I decided to go back for more. Del, what you got, mate?
This might be my brewery of the year.
Brewery of the year,
and it's Pressure Drop. I just think they make some incredible beers, and I picked this one up originally because I kind of wanted to dare I say, won the name, okay? It's called the Year of the Crab, and it's a 6.5% New England IPA.
Year of the Crab?
Yeah. You could have got a full year named after me. That's good.
I was I thought there was an S on the end of it, and I was like, but it was just a wee scuff on the can. That was what it is. But this, the New England style for me is, I don't want to say it's gone, it's dead, right? But I feel like it's been overdone and la-di-da-da. Anyway, so I bought this out of, I'm going to put it to the test again and see. And typical pressure drop. It's phenomenal, but it isn't as, it's not as New England-y as I would expect it to be, if that makes sense. Mm.
Is that why you like it? Because it's not like, too New England-y.
Well, it's not like just in your face, hazy, juicy, pish, too sweet. You know, like just overkill and lactose and just danky, like whatever you want to call it. But this is, it's just like super refreshing IPA, basically. It is definitely juicy. It's got like kind of peaches and oranges and like all the tropical bingo words that you would come to expect. But the body is just, it's just a wicked beer, to be honest with you.
Sounds, compared to what your brother's drinking right now, and I think you have words.
Oh, well, Grant's his beer, it doesn't matter how much he gets told, his beer choices are appalling. I don't know how we're brothers when it comes to taste buds, in all honesty. It's atrocious. So, Grant, what is he drinking? Coors?
That beer, Spain via Wrexham.
Oh, no. Madrid.
Come on, son.
Get it sorted, Grant. Steal some stuff off your brother, fuck's sake. Do yourself a favour.
Fridge is who?
Gilroy, what you got at your fridge, mate?
I went for something quite easy to start with. I picked it up when I was at Beats at the weekend. It's a Muir beer, I would say, for definite. Mm. It's a Swanee Dark Monroe. It's a single hot mild.
Lovely.
It's lovely. Lovely ruby red. Definitely got a bit of hop flavour to it, but it doesn't tell me what fucking hop it is. So there
Come
we
on.
Go.
Taste buds, bud.
I know. I'm going to work that out. What it is good.
On that note.
Tells me more about the A9 road than it does about what hops is in it, which is... No worries. The island of Orkney has no one roads, but most of our beer trundles past many of them on its southbound journey down the infamous A9 road. Dark Monroe is a refreshing dark beer. Shock. Pouring almost ruby red, it has a delicate coffee aromas and a light sweet flavour. Bag your first Orkney Monroe. Nae hops. But it's single hopped. It's good. So whatever hop it is, there's only one of it.
Well, talking about that,
it just make it a wee bit more complex and interesting over other milds, I would say.
The talking about hops in the can and on the wackage and stuff, we mentioned it on last week's podcast with regards to Stuart's beer, up or under?
Over and under, I think.
Yeah, that one.
You open my beers with one more than coming on me.
Brewed by Uncle Bulgaria.
Uncle Bulgaria, exactly. Fair enough. The team at Stuart did listen to that podcast, as they do regularly. Appreciate you guys listening to the number 9 best beer podcast in the world. Just saying once again. And they messaged and said they will make sure for next time to rectify that and put the hops on the cans. So.
Otherwise, we can't even fucking describe it properly because we don't know what's is that just evidence. Well, I've no fucking
idea.
In order to look professional,
what we need to do is Google the hops, get the tasting notes, and then tell you that that's what we've tasted when we drink the beer.
or not,
as the case may be.
Trust the taste buds.
Shoot us a cheeky wee email in advance.
Right. Or that. Or good. That. They'll probably come back to that, would be just sign up to their mailing list, in fairness. Right then, let's get cracking with what's on the
Before
list.
Before you jump in, Gavilar,
yes.
Can I shout something out for the top?
If you must.
So,
no, by all means, actually.
No, well, I'm going to do it because I feel like it's... You make fun of the brewery that I work for on a regular off air.
No, oh, fuck, here we go, thing. Here we go.
That's my first thing on my list.
Well, of course it is, but I'm going to do it because I wasn't sure if it was on your list or no. So.
Go on then.
But my, West Brewery in Glasgow, who I obviously work for, that if you didn't know, now you know, sort of thing, celebrated their 18th birthday party, or birthday, excuse me. So the brewery is now legal drinking age, and it was on Sunday. So based in the Templeton building in Glasgow, and has been since day dot. And I just wanted to give a wee cheeky shout out, to be honest, because they make very good beer. And as much as the boys all make fun of it now and again, that's mainly making fun of me rather than the beer. So I can take that. And however, there's tons of free beer that we're handing out.
Sorry. Scott's just changed his name.
And
in all seriousness, I think for any brewery in the 21st century to last 18 years is pretty decent, to be fair. You know, particularly coming into the market and the marketplace that West have, you know, brewing lagers and stuff in Scotland. It's a really, really set in its ways marketplace. You know, it's really hard to try and
understatement
compete.
Of the year.
I mean, Scott, you know, a Scottish lager drinker wanting to drink lager, it's really hard for them to look past Tennent's, and particularly when if you don't want to drink Tennent's, you're kind of saturated. Even since the early 2000s, you're saturated with things like Carling and Foster's and Kronenbourg and things like that. So it's quite an achievement that they've managed to carve out a niche in the market for themselves, and to last the pace has been pretty good. So well done, West.
I hope that says happy birthday, West. But
absolutely right.
Yeah, it is.
Geburtstag.
No, in fairness, you can't, like you said, for a brewery to last that long, they're doing something right.
So if you've not tried the beer, like cheeky like shout out, I suppose, go to westbeer.co.uk or westbeer.com, can never remember the old website, which is terrible. I'd go try some of the beers. Dare I say it, it's traditional German style beer with a Glaswegian twist on it. But everything's brewed.
Rabsy twist.
Rabsy twist. I could be the new collab. Rabsy twist. And it's definitely worth, like you say, there's always space in the fridge for good lager at the end of the day. And
I think the other thing to note there, Peter, like people listen to the podcast and watch it on Facebook or YouTube at the moment, or whatever it may be. These beers are regularly available north of the border in Scotland in supermarkets. I'm sure Morrison's has got an abundance of West, so you can't. There's no excuse not to try it. Give it a go. Even down here, actually, I'm sure I got. Is it G40?
G40. Yeah.
G40. Waitrose. This is 2 years ago. This is before mortgage, and this is before child. Waitrose does not get internet anymore. Just FYI. This is before all of that. But yeah, you can get it out of there as well.
I seem to remember drinking West in Cornwall as well at one point. So it does get a boot. So they're doing well.
That's true.
As you say,
I've talked about the cunts for long enough.
Much to my annoyance, I've never been through to their space, which obviously is the best place to try it. It's probably the best place. And it's some space by all accounts, and I've seen pictures and seen videos and stuff online, and it's a good place to head through to. It's somewhere different in Glasgow, somewhere you could spend a whole afternoon. Seems pretty spacious and friendly, and you can go in there and have a decent afternoon.
Mark said, is it friendly?
I've never been there.
He's the guy that goes to everywhere else that sells it. So if you want to get peace, go there. If you want to avoid market costs, go there, which is where we should start having meetings and stuff like
That's where we should just start the podcast, Faye. Just do it for there.
Start the podcast.
Which would actually, side note, would actually be fucking cool as fuck.
It would be good.
See, in the tap room, Mark, is every tap west, or do they have like guest every stuff as well?
No, for the most part, it's all west. There is a few guest. There's a couple of guest lines, and there's been a couple of ciders.
So the answer to that question was yes, then.
Yeah. No, but it's mainly been the same beer that's been on the guest line. It's mainly been cider.
Oh, right, okay.
As Mark said, though, parting shot, there's always room in the fridge for good beer. And once you've drunk all the West, you'll have plenty of room for it.
There Happy birthday, indeed. Happy birthday to West Brewery, indeed. Going from a brewery that Mark works for to a one that he soon would love to work for, his own brewery, obviously. And a question on your homebrew, mate. You sent some pictures through the week last week, some bits on Instagram as well. You had a wee bit of an issue.
We had the fire engines.
It looks like you're doing a wee bit of an experimenty with kind of switching things up.
You did some additions.
Well,
it's a crack.
I think I said to you before, there was a wee scorching issue as part of the boil when I brewed originally, and a bit of the grain kind of fell through, and it kind of obviously got stuck on the bottom of the kettle, and just obviously had a bit of an issue. And then I kind of prayed and hoped. So I purposely overhopped, especially in the hop stand aroma phase, to try and nulligate what I assumed was going to be the burnt toast vibes from the flavor. But so anyway, when I came and bought one it yesterday, it was just a bit of a typical brewing bottling. You know what it's like? Like there's bottles everywhere. You're sanitizing stuff. You're trying. It's all fun and games. And when I tasted it the first time, it was pretty bitter. Which I came to expect, but when it warmed up, it just got like burnt toast air, and I was just thinking that was the scorch, and you could smell it. So anyway, the funny thing is, Lynn's tasted it, and she thought it's actually all right, like it's not overly bitter, and I was a bit like, okay, but she's like, I kind of get a wee bit of the burnt out vibe to it, so I thought, if it's going to be semi-palatable for someone that doesn't drink beer at all, then let me bottle it. I'll carve it like I was going to anyway. So I just carved it, bottled it. So I bottled 7 or 8 bottles of it that way.
Mm-hmm. And then thought to myself,
I'm
going to
be happy with it if I bottle the whole shebang this way. So started, as you would do, started. I was off yesterday, so I had plenty of time. I was sitting Googling. And I'm like, what have I got in the house? I could add extra sugar, but if I add too much sugar, then that adds to the carbonation, and then I've got exploding bottles everywhere, and that's not the next thing. So I thought, no. So I had a hunter's, I had a big batch of lime sitting for birthdays and for gin and tonics and that, and just thought, right, screw it. So I done a bit of Googling and seemed to. Would have no impact on carbonation. If anything, it would maybe tame a wee bit of the sugar. So if you were going to put some in, I'd done all this before I bottled the first batch, to be fair. So I kind of made sure I just put the same level of priming for the whole 3 batches I'd done, and then basically just added the second batch I'd done had a little bit of lime in it, and then the third batch I'd done had basically 2.5 times that amount of lime in it, and just went fucking.
You're going to get a Mark Mexican lager,
basically. So
Mi cerveza,
Mexican.
Marsican. There you go.
So basically, the reason that you had that unfortunate incident with the scorching was because you tried a different mash technique. And if you go back and listen to the podcast with Budvar, that kind of explains the process that Mark tried to undertake the decoction mash.
No.
The
decoction had nothing to do with...
So
the decoction itself is done separately and was added into the mash tun. But basically, so you know my brew kit. So you've got the grain basket, and but under the grain basket you've got a hop filter on the top of the heating element, and then above that again you've got the secondary sort of like grain collector, if that's the best way, sort of sits on a couple of wee stands, and it gives you a bit of protection, and just a bit of, there's been a bit of grain and whatever has managed. Like, I've done it on Whirlpool.
Condoms on it, basically.
What was so that?
Condoms.
Is it filled in through the...
It's came down...
The gap at one of the sides or something.
When I've been, maybe like when I was doing... when I sparged or whatever. Because I had done the decoction mash, I sparged far more than I would normally just to get the...
So see, when you were doing your decoction mash, obviously you're mashing in your kit, in the grain father kit, so you can't boil part of your mash in the same kit then, surely, while you're mashing. So how did you do that? Did you take that out and put it in a pot and boil it in the cooker?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Exactly that. So basically it had the weight...
I mean, you didn't buy the grain son?
I didn't bring the grain cousin.
So, anyway, and the roundabout way that I was getting round to... asking a question was that you try this new technique to try and do something different with your brew, and we spoke to Budvar about the benefits of that process, and do you feel like you've achieved anything that you wouldn't normally have done with your ordinary process? Is there anything better about this beer than previous ones that you've made? I mean, obviously, but it's kind of difficult to overlook this, spectre of burnt toast. But is there any positives you can take from the experience of doing this different kind of mash?
I felt like when I tasted it yesterday, the body of the beer, considering it's 5.5%, it felt really creamy, like yesterday, and it's the exact same. It was the exact same grain bill as what went into the previous beer that you had not that long ago. Obviously, there's additionally hops and everything, so flavour, which wasn't in the first batch. But the body difference and the colour difference is, honestly, night and day compared to the last batch to the other batch. Now, yeah, obviously, there's a few variables to that. Again, ABV slightly higher.
And the color, part of the color might come for the scorch, but not all of the color.
But the color of the grain that was in the pot, when was boiled, was the darkness of that going in naturally had an effect on the overall color of the mash. So,
very good.
It's really difficult to say. But for the time difference, and brewing at home's it's the pros and cons of it is it takes all day, but the pros and the con of it takes all day. You know what I mean? And realistically, the extra step, and if I was making this particular kind of style of beer, anything like IPA or lager, kind of pale orientated, for the extra 20 minutes, because realistically. The mash steps that I'd done, I basically had it at 50. I had it at 50 degrees for half an hour, and then took it out. I took a quarter of it out and boiled it for the other half an hour, and then it went into mash for an hour. So it's realistically it's 1 hour longer than normal. Which in the grand scheme of it, isn't you can make that time up because quite easily. So no, I would definitely do it again. So fingers crossed. Who knows what the lime will bring, but it's, if it just helps kind of taint a little bit of the... It wasn't burnt, like, it was smoky is probably the best word, the best way to describe it. But if I said smoky to use on the group chat, the first faces that everybody would have made would have been like, you know what I mean? Whereas,
it's not a flavour that a lot of people like.
Correct.
But everybody likes jam on their toast. So that wee bit of fruit might work wonders, mate.
Fingers. Well, the thing is...
Lime curd.
Lime curd, aye. Well, the thing is, and I said that like when I was bought it, I was like, it's not for anybody else, like it's for me and it's for people that listen. If you want to try it and if I feel like it's actually palatable, I'm happy to give you a bottle.
Yeah.
And you know, and realistically the way I've done it is I'm going to have about eight bottles of nine bottles of each, like, aye. So I can do a group of nine trio of tasting. Basically after that it's gone and then we're on to the next thing. So
what are you thinking for the next one then? Are you not even thought about it yet?
I just like that kind of particular style, like overly like torrified wheat with a bit of pilsner malt. You know, it's a style that I'm like to drink just now, so it's probably something I'll go back to. My only concern is the score. So I gave it a good old scrub, as you can imagine. So I might need to just see what it's like heating it up. But if the score is going to continue, then the brew kit might turn into be a dark beer only kit. And we just have to use it for its charm and work around it. But it looked pretty, it was pretty clean. And I say there was no sort of anything like that was stuck when I left. So I'm hoping, and I managed to get myself another little grain catcher, if that's the best word for it. But yeah, like a little condom for my grandfather, mate, basically.
That's what it sounds like. Wee condom split. It sounds good though. It sounds interesting. Like, it sounds like with this
the process worked. I'm glad the decoction stuff worked. And any issue the blip that you had has got nothing to do with that. That's good. Because it means that then you've kind of that bit, which was the variable you were aiming at, worked. So, and you got, like, if you're saying it's creamier and it's got a bit of body to it, even although it's a slightly higher percentage, it would be good to then go and would you brew the same recipe again, but without any additions, without the decoction, to see what it tastes like, what the body's like in comparison again, but without any additions. Because I know last time you did the same grain bill, but it would be good to continue with that grain bill if you like it and it's something that you like drinking. Any variables and dial in without any additional stuff in it and really nail it for where it is, and then you can start adding in a new technique again afterwards. But I don't even mind drinking big beer all summer with you to get through and dial it right in so you get a version regular that you're happy with, and then you can go back to some of your experiments
You can just picture Scott in a sun lounger in your driveway, Mark, and just you coming out going, right, there's one brew. Nah, no there yet. Nah, try another one. Nah, no there yet. Just keep them coming.
Come down every 4 weeks just to taste if you like. That's fine. Fine by me.
It's probably not a bad idea in the grand scheme of things. Is going
because you're liking the style. You've got the ingredients there. You know what ingredients to get. You know what your brew kit's capable of. Dial that one style, and if you really like it, like, it's not a style you're likely to go off, considering your deliriums and various other bits and pieces that you've been trying recently and taking a real liking for. So it's not anything you're going to get pissed off or fed up with, like a pale or like someone else. It's a good one to go after, and if you can nail that and say, well, whenever anybody asks me, I can turn out a wheat beer like that. Everybody's are going to drink a wheat beer, you know.
I don't think it's as wheaty as I would want it to be, but that's probably more than the pills. And when I spoke to Brett about it at Strangers, and I showed him the recipe, he was like, "Your recipe is basically pretty spot on in terms of like 60-40, like wheat to pale." But he's like, "Maybe just because it's more pilsner malt, it's going to be a bit like drier." But like that's the two styles that I like. Like, you know, if pilsner and wheat beer are probably I'm going to drink a boatload of these two styles during the summer. So if I can infuse them to make a beer, then I suppose. But anyway, that's what it's. Mate, this is the part that I love about it, is that you don't really know. You've got an idea. You can read all. You can read all the books you want. Like honestly, look, this is about one. I'm still on. I'm getting the OGs in.
Oh, hold on.
Nice.
Oh. Nice. Well, there you go.
It is Big Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the James Moxon book that's open now as well. Like, honestly, it's just it turns into a bit of an obsession with me when it comes to this, and like, which is good and bad. But
yeah, it's exciting though. Like it's the bit where we've been down the road where with the beer that you guys brewed with Bowden. Right, we've been down that road. We've brewed that beer, the dark. What was that?
Fuck,
I forgot. Yeah, thank you. And the beer. And we've tasted a beer that the podcast is brewed alongside a brewery, and we've watched people brew it, drink it, and that excitement you've had that we've had that, and we've experienced that wee bit of ecstasy when somebody drinks something that you've made, and it's awesome. And it's something that once you've got a taste of it, you want it again, and you want it again, and you want it again.
Well, for all the people that we're speaking to, and I'm not going to mention it on their online, because if you listen, if they're listening, then you'll know who. But let's get these in the diary, these dates sorted, so there will be more cans and bottles and kegs floating around that we've had some influence over, and it's not just me brewing in my garage, you know, for for us lot, as in the small group of us that are nearby or whatever. But
oh, I like what you did there. I
if you don't know, you still don't know.
You still don't know. That's a wee seed. See, I tell you what, folks, honestly, see in like a year's time, you'll listen to that back and you're like, he told me then.
If you don't know,
that was when he lost it.
That's when
let's be honest, that ship has
that's when he went around the twist.
I've got to say, that ship sailed and sunk, mate. You know what I mean?
Long gone. Right.
I think the podcast's been far too amiable for the first 30 minutes.
And you want to switch your pace and new beers?
I need to throw some shade.
Shade, throw it.
Yep, I think it's time for the Beer Fridge Shadecast segment. And it's price, it's how much money I was having to spend at the weekend.
That doesn't sound like you, Cal, more than about price, son.
I was out on Friday in Glasgow, and I was out on Saturday.
Well, that's where the problem started. Imagine being outside.
He can't laugh. He's that upset.
So I've got a half-naked child coming into the room to say night-night to me, so that's why
I can get rid of you, don't worry. I'll get rid of you.
So,
yes! Woo! Oh, he's back.
I'll put you back.
So I was out on Friday in Glasgow, and I was out on Saturday in Edinburgh. And one of the party that I was out with was drinking non-alcoholic beer.
Went
to various places, and one in particular that I want to highlight, because we've sang its praises on numerous occasions on this podcast, and that's Bohemia in Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And went into Bohemia and ordered, I got 2 pints of Stewart's Nitro 80 Shilling, which was sublime, as it was the last time I had it. Absolutely fantastic beer. And Edinburgh price, £6.20 a pint, which I thought was, well, you know, I'm quite happy to pay that. It's Edinburgh. It's expensive, but it's Edinburgh. So
yeah.
I wasn't too fussed about that. And I was says, what alcohol-free beers have you got? And he pointed me in the direction of the fridge, and I looked, and I seen the Budvar non-alcoholic. And having tried that, and I actually quite enjoyed it, I thought, yep, right, I'm going to... there you go, Bud Lime.
That's not the one, though.
No. It's just the
old-fashioned.
It was the non-alcoholic one that we got sent
Okay, apologies.
And I quite enjoyed it. You know, I don't. There you are. That's it. That one. And it stands up to pretty much any other non-alcoholic beer that I've had. Obviously, aside Mash Gang and stuff, but it was a 330ml bottle.
Brought tears to a glassy.
It was a 330ml bottle. I want to ask each of the three of you, how much do you think I paid for a 330ml bottle of Budvar non-alcoholic beer?
330. Well, I was going to say 420.
Yeah, I'll take the over five for sure, because I know Edinburgh prices. And actually, I think I know roughly the price, so...
£5.20.
Oh, it's a pound off.
£5. No, I'm sorry. Right. I realise that profit's king and all the rest of it, right? But Bruhemia are taking tank fresh beer from Budvar. They must be getting that non-alcoholic beer for 330ml bottles. If they're paying a pound for that bottle of beer, I'll be fucking well surprised if they're paying that. Particularly when we know that we can get that in a supermarket for, what, 150 for a 500ml bottle, never mind 330ml.
Well, put it in perspective, how much did you pay last week for the Budvar Black Lager?
Right, 169. Right. 169 in Home Bargains for the Black Lager at 4.5%. It's just, I think it's a fucking disgrace that a 330ml bottle of non-alcoholic lager cost me £5.20. It's just it's an embarrassment. It really is. Yeah. Disagree with me. Disagree with me if you want, but fucking way.
I find it hard. Like, the price is a bit ridiculous, I've got to admit. But...
The next round I went up, I got a 500ml can of Erdinger non-alcoholic beer for £4.80. So where's the fucking sense in that? It does not make sense to me at all. And it's just taking advantage of people that are out and wanting to maybe stay off the beer or, you know, try something non-alcoholic. Maybe as a stopgap or whatever, you know.
Here's a question off Callum Gripe Corner. So is that going to be something then? Like, we're pushing non-alcoholic stuff in people, or the market is, and it's growing. We know it's growing because there's specific breweries just brewing non-alcoholic beer, which you wouldn't have seen 5 years ago. Is doing that in terms of the price of a non-alcoholic beer being pretty much the same price as an alcoholic beer just going to put people off completely even going out? We know that pubs and stuff are struggling and tap spaces, etc. If you're still going to have to spend the same amount of money you would for a full alcoholic beer as a non-alcoholic, is that just going to turn punters away?
It's getting me totally raging again. Like, the price difference between a pint of keg tank fresh Budvar in that pub, the price difference between that for a pint and a 330ml bottle of non-alcoholic for the same brewery, it was less than a pound of a difference between the two.
I don't disagree.
Is that not because the ingredients are the same, the time in the brew kettle and the time in the time to do whatever it's doing in the tanks is exactly the same?
Pish.
Well, it is. It's the same outlay that goes into it. So I can only imagine what I would like to see is the cost price between. Get the tank fresh stuff. You've got to put that away at the road. How much would they pay for a what would be the cost price on a bottle of normal Budvar by comparison? I don't think the price difference would be too much different. In comparison, like, if you take what Budvar charged for it.
Mm-hmm.
That black lager sat there because it sat somewhere else. Somebody's bought that before and not been able to shift it. and punt it, which is why it's ended up in Home Bargains at 169. So that's an outlier.
I'm just no, meaning, but it's no really, if you though, look, because if you go to any supermarket, I mean, the Black Lager aside, right, ordinary Budvar and Home Bargains is the same price. It's 169 for a 500ml bottle. But that's the same if you go to Lidl. It's the same price, you know.
How much is the free Budvar in Tesco?
In Home Bargains, it's cheaper.
Right.
What? Think about the economy of scale in that, though. Like, redeeming that mentioned how much they were brewing. And we're using Budvar for an example. But brewing, you know, 12,000, 20,000 litres of a beer and then fermenting it for months, you know, and then, you know, there's the cost effect, like aspects to all of that. Now, like, it's a long way. I'm not really justifying £5 for a 330ml bottle, right? However,
yeah, that's justifiable either, if you can get closer than you can, Cal.
But the thing is,
the
thing I want to mention is that the pubs are going through a really difficult time at the moment, and there's a number of reasons for that, right? But one of the big reasons is that the younger generation are not drinking beer. They're not drinking at all alcohol, right? But they're still going out and spending money. Like, they still need people in. So the variety that is available to people now, and the thought of how much, and we're picking on Bohemia just because you were in, but I have no idea what their electric bill will be and all the rest of it. And I know that's not the customer's problem. However, with staff rates going up in April, with VAT issue, or the price of the beer going up in April, with raw materials, with all the rest of it, right? The cost price to making X beer has jumped up a shit ton, like, without me going like too far into that. But one of the coming back to my point on the younger crowd now are still going out, right? And they're still filling pubs, but they're drinking non-alcoholic. They're drinking non-alcoholic spirits.
So they need to get their money back somehow.
And it's all about GP. Mm-hmm. It is. You know, and if you can make 70-80% on a bottle of Budvar, and people, like, if you didn't shift it at 5.25, it'll be in the fridge next week at 4.50. You know, and then you find the sweet spot. But
it will only, mate. It will only be in the fridge at 4.50. It will only. Because who's asking the price? Who's asking? Who's going to the bar and saying, how much is your Budvar non-alcoholic? How much is your Erdinger non-alcoholic?
I don't know.
They're going to the bar. Who does that?
A lot of people do that now.
Nah, surely not.
Honestly, the younger, and I keep saying the younger generation because it makes us sound
the
old.
Younger, the youth.
But they are.
The younger,
the
not
amount of pubs that I deal with, mate. The amount of pubs,
that is absolute guff.
The amount of pubs I deal with that said, I can't take it off, it's because it's my cheapest beer. Or what about bottle? What's your cheapest? I can't take it out because it's my cheapest. How? Because people ask, what do you have that is the cheapest?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've got X and I've got Y. But, you know, and that's not how we were. Like, but then we were growing up, we got a Miller Genuine Draft for £1.16 at the livery. You know what I mean? Like, and I guarantee you, if Miller was in draft now, I bet it would be a really good pint. And I bet it would be like £5.50 a pint.
Remember the rage when it was what was the price change that killed us in the pub? It was because you ended up with nonsense five. Was it not all the, remember you used to put all the 5 pence and all the dross in the
it was the 20 pence. Mark and I used to go around on a Tuesday, and we would always be first, and it was £2.40 a pint at that point, and we would always have a 20 pence left over because the round was 4.80, and we'd pay a fiver and we'd get a 20 pence, and Scott would put the 20 pence in the bag, and after a number of weeks we would have enough 20 pences to get essentially a free pint.
Yeah.
So that was the first pick.
I would love to hear. If you're Dark Alan, if Billy's still watching, how much was a pint back in the day?
I was going to say we'll get the story about that. You used to be able to get 2 pints or three. Was it 3 pints?
I can't remember.
Three pints of 70 and three packets of crisps
the one. For £1 was my dad's.
There you go.
Give him a few scoops and ask him about pint prices. So you'll get the story.
In fairness, the bar was a keg, an old door.
No, it was the Murray. It was the old Murray up in Poe. It's still there. Like
that's it.
Probably still the same.
It was one keg, one old door on its end, on top of the keg, one tap on top. In the middle of a ploughed field.
Mm-hmm. He used to laugh.
Three packets of crisps.
It used to be lager. I'm taking that back. It used to be lager that they drank, but then the price went up on the lager. So my dad, then that's why my dad started drinking 70, because the price was cheaper to keep the price the pint price.
Because he's a tight ass.
Maintain the pound rate. Back then, though, the way you could do that, obviously. It was in the past, so it was older. But we're talking about the beer and stuff like that. The beer didn't have to go hundreds of miles to get to where it needed to be delivered.
It went down the road.
It was Tennent's Lager or it was Thingway, it was along the road. And the three packets of crisps, right reason or none, were either Highlander or fucking Golden Wonder, in which case they come to 5 minutes.
Highlander crisps.
So they're like on your doorstep. So it's moved like 10 centimetres. No wonder you could get 3 pints and 3 packets of crisps for a quid. Because it's comfy one door either side.
I know.
Talk about stories, and if he's listening, he'll maybe chip in. But he tells a story about when they used to drink in the Masons in Bathgate, and they had a promotion where every time you bought 2 pints, you got a 3 packet of crisps. And every time you got 3 packets of crisps, but every time you accumulated 3 packets of crisps, you got a free pint. And there was weeks and weeks gone by, and then there was more crisps than you could eat. And there was weeks and weeks gone by, and the office was getting filled with black bags full of crisps. And his boss had to, this was his work colleagues that he was drinking with, and his boss had to bring them in and have a serious conversation about the amount of crisps that they were eating.
I'm worried, 16 pints that went down before
exactly.
it.
I'm worried about the amount of crisps that he's eating.
I put on the chat while we're having those conversations, favourite beers of the year so far. And James has popped a comment in there saying the Kona Big Wave has
nice, James.
It's been his favourite beer of the year so far.
I don't think
Kona's an OG, man. That's like a proper
Kona Big Wave. That's a Cave Direct number, is it not?
I think so.
Kona Big Wave.
James does have I don't know if he would have if his American friends would have helped him out there, because James actually runs Across the Pond Brew, the network with all the sports. So there's a wee plug for you, James. It might have a few hooks, but that's a definite OG for American kind of style beers. While I'm blathering on here, Miguel, you drank my beer of the year last night, I think, or on Sunday night.
What did I? The Tug?
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Is that it? Is that your favourite?
Aye.
It was very good. I must agree. It was excellent. I think the Powder Monkey Westy. It's obviously not at the same prestige, but I would say it's up there in terms of bitterness and depth of flavour. It's really good. 100%. The green can. Was it Charge or something?
Monkey Charge.
Aye, that's good. And the collab with Sheep and Wolves Clothing, which you also got when I dropped off.
I've got that in the fridge. I was going to have that next, actually.
It's ridiculous.
But that's Pressure Drop for me, or a brewery I have overlooked so many times. And I know you've mentioned the old Tug, Alligator Tugboat a few times, and I've just been like, ah, it sounds great. And I've tried it on keg once, and I knew it was a tasty beer, but their beer, like when I got the box, not the other, that just, it's been.
See, the thing that, see, for me, with Alligator Tugboat, which I think just sets it aside, it puts itself in the bracket of, it just goes, I'm an IPA. Doesn't tell you it's West, doesn't say it's this, it's saying an IPA. You have it and you go, this is an old school IPA. It's bitter, and it, but fuck, man, this is the third can I will be having of Alligator Tugboat tonight, because it's fucking ridiculous. Another beer that I want to mention, which could be, it's going to end up on the list of beers of the year for me personally, at least. And no surprise, in fairness, when you see the breweries that are in this collab, and it is in the form of Beak, Rivington, and Track. Okay. I mean, fucking Christ on a bike.
It's like the Harlem Globetrotters of beer, to be fair.
It essentially is. It's called Triangles. It's a double IPA. It's 8%. I've put a review up on our Instagram page. By all means, go and check it out. And this blew the tits off me. I think it was Friday or Saturday night when I had it. Lavish quantities of Galaxy Motueka and New Season Hard Selected Citra.
How's that different to your?
No soft Citra was harmed in the making of this beer.
No, it's not soft Citra. It's hard selected. Does that mean they went up and kicked it off the plant or something?
Hard selected.
So we're getting OJ vibes, orange juice vibes, not OJ. That one with the gloves. Lemon curd and ripe flat peaches. Why are the peaches flat?
Because that's a type of peach.
All right, cheers, mate.
A peach that's like, as opposed to being like that, it's like that.
Oh, no, okay.
But the squash peaches.
Aye, it looks like somebody sat on it.
Okay. This, honestly, from the just opening the can, smelling it, tasting it, it fucking blew the tits off me. Absolutely loved it.
Good grab on it.
One of the best dippers I've had this year. To an extent of going, and I wrote it on the Instagram review, is it better than putty? Thank you, sir.
Oh, there's flat peaches. What are they?
There's flat peaches.
What's their Sunday name?
Flat peach.
Mm. Peach flat. Peach lunch. So yeah, if you get a chance, if you get a chance to pick up this Beak
Triangles
collaboration beer between Track, Rivington, and Beak called Triangles, do so. This should be more of a hype beer than fucking putty. I'm just saying. But we know that's just a marketing genius. So
you can, what else is better than putty?
Fucking, oh my god, yes. Yes, yes, and yes.
I finally opened it.
7.6.
So it's Brew One Nelson.
This beer ever.
Galaxy Brew One Nelson. Oh yes.
Fucking amazing.
7.6, so it's light. It's just fucking fully flavoured. Peaches, pineapple, just tremendous. Tremendous beer.
Brew One, a hop that's kind of fallen off a wee bit, but I would say that's amazing.
I actually didn't like it. You know how it made its, what? like tour of the world. And I remember trying.
It's like, you're fucking mad.
Imagine having beef with a hop.
No. Well, it's kind of how I roll, to be honest. Let's be honest. But I remember us trying.
Work outside the firm with his fucking
blackout.
Shy.
No.
Fuck, no, two, one.
don't brew. Want that funk of Brew One or something like that. You know what I mean? It was, I just always felt like it was like rusty tennails. But then I've tried it recently and I'm like, it's actually, you know, you're obviously getting something, especially when it's mixed with, you know, the old My Mate Nelson. You know what I mean? Like, it's obviously doing something right. So,
honest to God, that is one of the smoothest beers I've potentially ever had.
It's delicious.
It's really like silk in a glass.
Speaking of rusty tennails.
No.
Oh, no.
Right.
David.
I was in a shop. Oh.
No.
Hamilton's Nitro Stout or a London couple. Of,
Hamilton are a good brewery. Like Darby.
If David Nicol could tell us how much that pint was, that'll send a few members of this podcast into absolutely
no. No, guarantee that's six. I'm going to guess 670.
It might make me feel.
Yeah, I know, yeah. That's a 7 or 8 pound.
It's quite a bit. I would have been pushing £8 there. Like, So I was in a shop the other day, and behind the counter, it being Scotland and in particular, you know, the central belt of Scotland, there was the obligatory two shelves of our favourite tonic wine, Buckfast. Right. The question that I want to ask you: have you seen the latest Scottish competitor to take on our, there you are, Dave. To take on our favourite tonic wine. Have you noticed this, Scott? Mark, no. Gavin, have you noticed the latest addition to the tonic wine shelf?
I mean, I'm pure these days, and this will speak volumes. I'm a Marks and Spencer's purist these days, so I've never been in anywhere that sells anything fortified.
Mm. Can't hide money, can you?
Other than port.
Or
sherry.
Just, I mean, the in Marks and Spencer's, it's just caviar they have at the till.
I've not been in
day to day to see what's there. What is
it?
It being my favourite hop and everything, there was a bottle next to the Buckfast that said El Dorado.
Mm.
And I thought,
yeah, I've seen El Dorado.
The fuck's that? Mm-hmm. Right? So I googled it when I got home, and El Dorado is a tonic wine made in Scotland.
Mm. I've seen El Dorado.
I didn't know this. So the next time I'm in day to day, I'm going to have to buy a wee half bottle of El Dorado just to see what it's like. Yeah. And I'll report back.
Yeah. I've got the can.
If there's any of the beer fridge faithful that I've tried El Dorado tonic wine, then please get in touch and let us know.
I've got a wee cheeky can of Buckfast that I got at the trade event last week. They're doing the wee 330 mil, like thin 330s that you would get, like gin and tonics.
And
that.
Right.
And you now get canned wine.
Canned wine. And might I add, they have a wee cheeky 5, so that's 14% Buckfast in a can. And then they've got.
Oh, fucking tremendous.
They've got cheeky, a wee cheeky.
What number is it?
I've got. I did ask the boy about the number, and I can tell you that the number means
does
deadly
it,
squat. Other
means
than
nothing. Do you still track it off here?
So the lower the number, that would have been the numbers were basically the batches that running like the order from the bottler, but they always bottled in like from 1 to I think it was 24 or something or 32 or something. He said. And what anyway, so. Batches, so that was the first thing I asked him. Like, what's all about the what number is it, mate? He was like, "Fuck off." But basically, so the number one. So basically, if you think about it, coming out of a fermenter, number one was like at the bottom. So they deemed it as like the thicker stuff, and all the you know. And realistically, there was no difference at all. It was just, but he was like, "You've no idea."
We've all seen the local miscreants. We've all seen the local miscreants in the shop searching through the fridge. Looking for their favourite number. Oh, it's a number 7. Nah, they want that. Nah, give me a number 4. We'll take that. Number.
You mean the local wine experts, the vintners of that were scouring.
Let me scouring alter the position of my hat for the top for this conversation.
Yeah, I'll go get. If we're going to do a segment about it, I've got the tins ready. I'm in. So.
It's the one with the lemonade in it that I can't understand.
This is the point.
I've never known anybody in my entire life to mix Buckfast with lemonade.
Can I just say though, I'm going to leave it for when folk are around, but so I can. I'm not just sitting myself getting Buckfast, but. The lemonade one was actually really tasty. It was quite refreshing, to be fair. So I'm in.
Good.
Did you try a Buckfast Negroni?
No.
We had one of them in Glasgow, didn't we?
You need to try it. So you've got your can of Buckfast. So you need to get a measure of gin and mix it with a double measure of Buckfast with orange and ice and try that.
Game on.
Tell you, game on. That fucking frozen picture right there.
Freezewell.
That's a good frozen picture.
Freezewell.
Lovely.
Am I still frozen?
No, like heavy.
Heavy frozen.
I like Elsa.
Let it go,
mate. I'm just leaving it. I'm just let it run. I'll
Can I tell you what I'm drinking, please?
Yes, sorry. Sorry, Scott.
That's all right. So this is a collaboration between, you're talking about kind of heavyweights. I've not heard many of these before, other than the top, but I'm going to go and look them up afterwards because this beer's excellent. This is a collaboration between Omnipollo, the 8-State Brewing Company, Brewhouse, and Troon, which, being Scottish, I know Troon the place. I doubt it's the breweries for there, very much so. This beer is called Graveyard Shift. I don't even know what I'm doing next Friday. It's a hoppy double IPA. It's a fifth birthday beer for 8-State Brewing Company. Enthusiastically crafted. That's how he's totally fallen over at the sound of this beer. It's cracking. It is another beer where they didn't tell you what's in it. I can tell you that it's 8.2%. It looks like fresh orange juice. And it's absolutely excellent.
Have a swatch. Let's see, that looks very bright.
Very tropical, very orange juicy.
I was going to say, that's orange juice.
Mm-hmm. It's got that proper kind of Aussie, New Zealand hop vibe to it. Very juicy. Oh. Another great beer. I've enjoyed the two that I've had for Omnipollo so far, and I'm looking forward to the last one I've got.
Talk it's about
you seen they've got a collab with New Barns.
You cunt.
Sorry.
Ooh.
I was literally, I was, you look stole
us,
it.
Reading, look at us. That's reading tongue. The news.
That's it.
Are you going to talk about what fresh ale is yet?
Oh, well.
Oh, he's in frozen. He blinked.
We'll get there, but aye. No, I literally was going to say the exact same thing, Mark. Aye. Omnipollo and New Barns. How? Oh, mate.
Can I just say,
a dark mild, I think it's a dark mild they've done into it.
It's just a mild diner.
It'll be dark.
It's been really refreshing recently to see the UK breweries collabing with heavyweights in the States and Europe and all the rest of it. You know, so, and I was going to bring this up, because I know the guys at New Barns were off. Was that just last week or was it the week? But anyway, it doesn't really matter. But it is really refreshing. It shows you where the UK craft beer scene is going, because the guys at Flock were at Finback a few weeks back as well.
Yep. Which,
and I'm like, you know, you're talking about all these names, you know, and obviously they still need to produce beer, but it's just good to see.
Fucking Mashley's never out of America.
Oh, he's basically a resident there now, isn't he?
Taking over the world.
I know.
But as a brewery, you're not going to collaborate with someone who you don't respect and who you don't think is going to bring something to the party. Whether that be your, you know, adding to your experience, you know, helping you with things that you don't know. So. You know, it can only be good things for these breweries to be collaborating. And it says a lot for the craft beer industry in Scotland and the UK that heavyweights like Omnipollo and the like are desperate to come in and and work with these guys.
It's the market that they're after, realistically, isn't it? You know, it's opening the door, but like you say, it's mutually...
Easy. I mean, it's definitely mutually beneficial. I mean, you look at New Barns in particular, like, look at the... As much as some of their beers of late we've kind of been with at times, their use of weird grain is something that everybody would want access to, get
Do Omnipollo need that, knowledge and stuff.
Aye.
They're already so I mean, I suppose
it's something they want to just learn as much as they can, and it's another process they'll not know about.
Question though, and you guys need to tell me, is that Omnipollo beer still available in Morrison's up there? I know it's still doing, I know I've seen it, I've still seen it during here. I seen it last week. It was a stout they had in Morrison's
with a smiley face.
Aye, we got dead excited about it the fuck when it came out, and then...
Aye, I went recently on the tour.
Yes,
that was like 2 years ago, wasn't it?
And I'm saying, is you still get it up there? That's what I'm asking.
No, they brought it out again.
Right, aye, so it's they've still got it. It's still available down here. I'm going to put things back on track because I mentioned at the start that we're going to talk about fresh ale and what the fuck it is. And I want to make sure we finish.
You've talked about fuck all, by the way. You're absolutely ridiculous.
No, I know, I know. Everything we've mentioned, I've no fucking.
We've totally derailed your conversation point at every pause. If we've not stole your thunder, we've fucking veered away onto something different
I would assume that is the exact podcast in general, though. That's the whole premise.
But if I say something at the start, I need to make sure we fucking at least follow through it.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm dead pissed off about the traffic lights at the Deepbourne Roundabout.
What roundabout, you cock?
Fresh ale. Fresh ale is.
What is a fresh ale?
Aye. What is a fresh ale?
Well, that's the question. So,
this ice is freezing.
I'm going to fucking stab you.
What is hash browns?
What is hash browns? It's in the same thing. That's the four corners, isn't it? That's the compass. What is fresh ale? What is hash browns? This ice is freezing.
It's up there, and it's a perfect time for my phone to be a little... So, Otter Brewery last year, 12 months ago, launched beer called Fresh Ale. It's been picked up by Carlsberg and Marston's, and they're going to end up doing the same thing. And Otter are like, oh, yes, we've came up with this idea, we're going to fucking run with it. And it's a case of what actually is fresh ale, because it's clearly going to be a hybrid. Then it's cask, but it's older.
No, it's just what we spoke about the other week, Gav.
It's the exact thing. It's modern fucking.
It's modern. The modernization of cask beer. It's someone has put a label on it. So
what is it? Is it a cask or is it a keg? How does it work?
It's cask ale. Just cask.
So it's cask. It's no chilled. It's no.
Not according to what I've like. I just literally looked at fresh ale about 10 seconds ago. So, you know, if the aggregators come out, they can run and jump. But basically, what I'm getting here is it's the production of to help produce better cask or increase the cask ale market. Bridging the gap between craft beer, cask ale, and lager. So according to this, but again,
the article doesn't really pinpoint exactly where it fucking sits.
It's getting on this one here. It's getting pulled through a hand pump. If you know what I mean.
So it's fucking cask then. It's just fucking cask. All you've done is just labeled the same stuff. And just thought, we'll just put a new name on it. I'm not saying you polish a turd, it's still a turd, but essentially I'm saying that. I'm not saying cask is shit, because cask is fucking tremendous. But just fucking nonsense, if you ask me.
So, according to this, fresh ale is not a live product like a cask ale is. So, obviously...
Right, so it's deed. It's just in a cask.
It's flat keg then.
It's basically kegged. So when the beer goes into a keg, you know, it's obviously not live because
it's done for a minute.
It's done mm-hmm. fermenting, and they usually, for the most part, they will take the yeast out of cask beer by through filtration or pasteurization, whatever it is. But and if it goes into a cask ale, it normally runs through a secondary fermentation, and that's why breweries use stuff like Heisenglass and stuff to help strip and like reduce the yeast strain and like filter right, out okay. all the crap. So according to this, they are basically whereas they're filtering out the yeast just like you would a keg product, but it's getting put through a cask. Fresh ale.
So it's just getting Heisenglass before it goes in the cask then.
So it might not even like depends
what that Irish boss, whatever you want.
Because if it's hazy or whatever now, like you're getting away with more haze within the cask.
They're removing the yeast.
You're taking the yeast out, which will obviously
and removing the opportunity for a secondary fermentation. You're saying that's it. When you put it in there, it's the end product. Which I suppose then means that you don't have as much. Does that reduce the heft on that we've spoke about at length before, that the best cask beer is looked after by the best cask pubs? Does it open up cask as a market to folk with dildos behind the bar who don't look after cask beer? Does it open that opportunity up to them because they don't have to look after it because it's got all the guff with it? Mark.
Sorry, I'm reading. Sorry, mate. I was like totally like I just got off in the wee bit and
is it cask for dummies? Is it effectively is that
it sounds like
in terms
it
of pouring like and it. Pouring and care?
It's getting run through the natural cask system anyway, according to what I'm reading here. So it's not going through a chiller. It's getting poured between 8 and 10 degrees, which you would expect a good cask pub to basically just run it through. And it's obviously not getting carbed. So it's everything that I'm reading here. I say I'm scanning this really quickly. I say it would be quite interesting to read more, but it sounds like it's cask beer that has been filtered, as in stripped. The yeast is stripped out it, and then before it hits the cask, and then it's getting poured from there. So,
but no, no, it's alligator time.
Yeah, that's not cask beer, mate. That's it's
fucking heaven.
Okay, let's just imagine that was on cask.
Oh, mate. That would be coming full circle to our conversation. That's a tenner a pint on.
Oh, but I'd pay it. An easy pay
100%. 100%.
Fucking pay it in a heartbeat.
I had this conversation. I know we're coming back. Sorry to like that, but I feel like instead of us tangenting off, Gav, but I had this conversation today.
It's my last thing in the last, you're fine.
And I suppose it's quite handy, but like, what's the cut off with pint pricing? Because we're going to hit 10 or a pint. Easy.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to hit 10 or. It's like, within the next 3 years, and what I think will happen is it'll come up and then the pubs will die, basically. 11 quid a pint. Here we go. There we go.
In London,
Unity Super Cali Fragilistic.
Honestly, in London, see if you're not even London, to be fair, see even down here where I'm
at. A dipper. Normally, a dipper would be served in a 2/3, though, realistically, let's be honest.
True.
And you would probably still spend 7 or 8 quid on a 2/3.
Fair.
You know, so a pint is, but so. I'm playing this with two hats on here, right? Because I think there's two markets to it. Because we as craft beer geeks and wankers have put our hand in our pocket for bigger, more flavoursome beers at a far bigger cost than the Joe Blogs, Joe Public that would be going to a bar looking for a couple of pints of Moretti, Star, whatever it is, right? Yeah. Because and so there's two differences here. So. But I want you to think about it from I suppose let's put it from both perspectives. You know, would you spend a tenner on a pint of Cask Sonoma?
No.
No. right, okay, that's good. So this is the whole point. This is me. I've got like five beers written down, and I was like, no, no, the higher or lower aspect of it. But so Sonoma was
a game.
Well, Kenny, but no, but I had wrote a few beers down, if you know what I mean, thinking main hitters and the tenor, because. But then I said, well, my next question then, if I stick with Sonoma, is I'm going with cask or keg beer, like, so you can play it however you want. Would you spend £7 on it?
On what, sorry?
Sonoma.
On cask?
Cask or keg? Whatever you feel is the premium option.
It's 3.2 in it, or 3.4?
3.4%.
Not even spending your money, I would.
No, I think so.
So £7 was where I said I would pay it. Like if I knew it was looked after, I said, look, I think that's I'm £7 up. I'm not sure we could get away with that. No, you wouldn't, David. You wouldn't.
You would.
Nah.
You would get it if you asked for it. I mean, if you asked,
you would get it if you asked for it. At that room, you would get it if you asked for it. But they wouldn't have it as a serving suggestion.
Yeah.
Anybody who's ever read the back of a cereal packet knows exactly what I mean by serving suggestion.
So anyway, so £7. So you swing to pay £7, right? But I'm trying to think. I don't know what it costs, and we can throw that to our Discord and John, because he was in Manchester recently, so he might have a rough estimate of how much.
What is Discord?
You should be worried.
No, you two are just fucking out of touch with the world.
Anyway, we're not going to do that.
Is it a vibrant chat community?
It's a vibrant chat. A vibrant chat of beer fridge podcast lovers and enthusiasts who chat through their beer journeys.
That's it.
Do you play the PlayStation?
Aye.
Anyways.
I love the PlayStation.
there's good updates to the weekend.
But see, that's it. If we get stuff for the Discord. So Noma, putting that into perspective, I suppose, how much I'm going to stick with the tenor. I'm guessing it's going to be a quick no anyway. But I had Fierce's new IPA, 6.5%.
A tenor? Nope.
Tenor? No. Okay, fine. £7?
Nope. No offence to beer, so I'm not paying £7 a pint.
Anybody else?
What beer, sorry?
Well, I've just got...
I missed the beer name. It's Fierce IPA.
It's just a name. I can't remember the name of it, but 6.5%, brand new.
No, late shift.
Would late you spend...
£7.
£6.50. So you pay £6.50, but this is...
75. I'm just doing principle on the plane or £7.
To be fair, I was in Edinburgh and paid £6.20 for a pint of Stuart's Nitro 80 shilling. So I'd probably spend £7 on a pint of late shift.
When you're pissed, you don't know.
So because this is the point I was making.
6.5% rocket fuel. So that's
But this is where I'm getting to. We're at that point where you are if you're maybe not happy about it, but you know, it is.
Well, the question to ask there, off the back of what you just said, there, Mark, what was, because I can't remember Jack Sugar from that night. That night that we were in,
you've got all the signs left.
I've got all the eye, and we had the Phantasm. I'm sure we had pints of it.
Callum will tell you, because he swallowed his wallet, I think, after that came in.
How much was that a pint?
How much was Phantasm a pint?
You were at least £8, so.
That was about £8, aye. Yeah.
There's your answer to all your questions right there. Because we were half... I don't know
if you were happy about it.
I think 3 years was at best miles I've used. 1 year was early moon. 1 year was played 9 holes.
England equals.
But this is the point I'm coming back to and coming round to is that, like, obviously it depends on the style of beer and la-di-da-di-da-di-da. But when you, so that's us who are, you know, craft beer aware. Now, imagine, like, the Joe Punter who is talking about Starra Pramen and Tennent.
I thought you coined a phrase there, craft beer aware.
Craft beer aware. Craft beer aware.
You like that?
I did like that. That was good.
Yeah.
Craft beer aware.
I'm so
if you wankers and geeks, that was craft beer aware.
You said it that quickly, craft beer aware.
But that's why. That's my.
That's your marketing terminology, isn't it?
That's my mark. That's Mark during the day while talking to people.
Aye, that's come straight out of a PowerPoint presentation.
No. 1,000%.
That's been tagged to a pie chart every couple of times.
Straight out the deck, exactly. But it is just quite an interesting topic. And I said that, like, I actually said that to somebody today. They were talking about Tennent's Lager, and they said to me, you know, we'll just never take it out of the pub. It's ingrained in our pub and in, like, the people that drink here. And I said, so what happens if it got to the stage where you had to charge £8 for it? No, no chance. And I was like, but I was like, but, you know, Tennent's have got every right to put the price to whatever because they have a monopoly and they'll never maybe hit £8, but, like, you know. And he was like, oh, and it got people thinking about it a bit more. So anyway, just
that's quite difficult.
CBA.
I seen a weird thing the other day, and I think it might, or it was the day, and it might work for the craft beer industry actually. Every now and again, or a macro that might decide to go crafty as a result. It was a guy who was talking, some economist guy was talking about someone who tried a marketeer or something about KFC in South Africa. And KFC in South Africa had their product or whatever, it wasn't selling. And they were like, well, what we'll do is we'll decrease the price and that'll sell it. But that's the least cost effective way of selling their product.
Mm-hmm.
It's always automatically going to hit you. He says, you should try putting the price up. He's like, what do you mean putting the price up? He says, well, he says, if you put the price up and it still doesn't sell, what have you lost? If you put the price down and it still doesn't sell, you've put the price down and you've devalued your product. So why not increase the price?
Yeah.
And increasing the price and making it feel more exclusive, actually, I think made it more, increased the demand, which increased the how people saw the product and then people sought after it. Went after it. If you think how hard Stella worked to go try and move away from wife beater or whatever. And now look at 1664 Blanc, which I mentioned earlier, has now come back in as this weird crazed thing. And I bet it's a wee bit more expensive. And I bet the bottles and everything look a wee bit more refined. I bet the packaging's a bit slightly more refined. But 1664 for me, I don't know about you guys, but 1664 was always absolute detritus. But now that they've waited long enough to bring it back, and it's probably got that, it's not going to be sold like a supermarket beer for them.
No.
It's going to be sold like it's probably a demand thing. They're probably throttling supermarket supply of that because everybody's raking about looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually it'll get to a point whereby they have it out there in a decent amount of demand. But it just made me think about craft beer stuff where you could probably turn, if you wanted to, a macro back into something a bit more refined and a bit more crafty. If you increase the price and change the packaging ever so slightly, you could demand a higher price for it. Throttle the availability and make it that wee bit more refined. The craft beer aware might start to pick up on it as like it's a throwback thing or whatever. You're talking about Miller Genuine Draft. Imagine Miller Genuine Draft coming out in
like
Fancy 500s, Year of the Lager type, for back to old school. The other one that I always think about is if you got that in the UK with just because I'm an apologist, country music stuff is obviously, you've seen Beyonce, you've seen Post Malone, all this, that, and the next thing, or doing kind of country stuff recently, various different awards. Coors Banquet. Okay. Coors Banquet is the Cowboys beer of beers. If they brought Coors Banquet in the UK at the moment, folk would be falling over themselves to go and get it. Telling you now. And it's, I bet it's mince.
It would just be Coors
Banquet. But they could put the Brun logo on it. They could put the Brun paper on about it. the kind of goldy labeling and put the cowboy or the steer on it that's got the Coors Banquet label's got, and sell Coors Light like that, and everybody would buy it.
100%.
Just absolutely insane. They would thought would be falling out of themselves, and it's just macro rubbish. Same with Miller High Life. You brought Miller High Life out here, people would be falling out of themselves to go and get it as well. And it's just Miller High Life. But the nostalgia and the old school, it's the same with Lone Star. The amount of times I've seen that thing on Instagram with Matthew McConaughey, where he's in the, is it True Detective or whatever, where he's in
all
the,
right,
he's,
all right, all right.
He gets the four-pack of Lone Star and he's, right, let's go. Would be falling out of themselves to have all that stuff. Mental.
No, don't disagree, mate. Don't disagree with it.
Sorry, that was another weird tangent, but I was just thinking about.
No, see, but in fairness,
bite themselves all that stuff. Thought about buying a tenner a pint. What we'd spend. I mean, you see how desperate I am for a canny Sierra Nevada. I'll do terrible things for a canny Sierra Nevada. So you can only imagine what these gamers would be like over Coors Banquet or High Life.
No, exactly. No, full podcast has been full of tangents, which is not a bad thing whatsoever. We've been through some of the list of things that I've got I had written down, but and then some. And I appreciate everyone that's been watching on Facebook and watching on Instagram. Facebook and YouTube, excuse me. We're doing a live one as well. So if you listen to this after on Spotify or iTunes, by all means, jump over to those platforms as well. Like, follow, and share. Drop us a 5-star rating. It does honestly help us out massively. So if you can do that, I'd be much appreciated. You also go to Patreon as well, patreon.com/beerfridgepodcast. Show your support for the Beer Fridge Podcast. We are crowdfunding for a new office chair for Mr. Muir. So feel free and get involved in that one as well. Next week on the podcast, we have got New Wharf Brewery joining us. That's going to be an interesting one. It's going to be a really good one, I feel like. New Wharf have been smashing it out of the park recently with some amazing beers and getting involved in different podcasts and different platforms as well. So they'll be joining us next week on the podcast. So thoroughly looking forward to that. Right, I mean, then. Any last comments?
Creaking. It's actually really, really, it's loads and loads and loads of wee farts. Loads and loads of wee farts. That's what that is. If you were watching live, I hope to fuck you were doing something else at the same time. I would say this podcast biggest selling point is that it's very second screen friendly. It's the podcast that you play. As a viewer, I listen while you're doing something else.
Speak for yourself, mate. Face to the radio, going.
I'm just meaning please be doing something else. Tell me you were doing something constructive.
We know a lot of people who are in the industry who will have us on the background whilst they're brewing beer. True. Just an FYI. So to those people, we appreciate you for making the delicious liquid. What the fuck happened to you, Cam? Liquid that we enjoy every single week. Like I said,
is it just me that's not listening?
No, Gav, we can't hear you.
You've died.
Uh-huh. Oh, there he is. That's what happens when you pull wires out. Nah, he's not back. He's muted.
He's still on mute.
Just unmute yourself, you'd be good.
Is that any better?
Yeah. There you go. You're back with us.
He's back in the room.
I got that excited that I managed to flick my wire.
Flicked your bean right out of there.
Exactly. Until next time on the podcast, the home of real beer, real breweries, real opinions. Flick your wire. See you, bye.